The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Kremlin said it was suspending its participation in an agreement that allowed safe passage to ships carrying Ukrainian grain exports. However, the agreement appears now to be back on the table and the suspension may be lifted later today. But it comes in a week that saw missile strikes on major Ukrainian cities hitting critical infrastructure, which Putin described as a response to drone attacks by the Ukrainians on shipping belonging to Russia. For the latest on Ukraine, I'm joined by James Waterhouse, the BBC's Ukraine correspondent, who's currently in the city of Dnipro. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
First of all, how battered is Ukraine's infrastructure? I know it's a huge country, there are many cities and towns, but generally speaking, are they managing?
Yes, is the short answer. The temptation is to think that the country is falling to its knees. Now, don't get me wrong, the country's infrastructure is under an extraordinary amount of strain as the Russians continue to shift to try and put pressure on different populations by targeting electricity and water supplies. And it's interesting, when you speak to people who leave the country and then come back, they're often struck by just how much darker it feels as winter approaches. Cities like Kyiv, Dnipro too, where I am, they get dark very quickly, either through forced blackouts or planned blackouts in certain areas in order to conserve energy. In the city of Kyiv in the south where we were, the police were tasked with enforcing a new bylaw which limited or banned people from using external lighting. And it really does have an effect and makes the curfews feel a lot more oppressive. Mm. But even when you see these missile strikes, cities often get back on their feet within a day or two. So 80% of Kyiv at the start of the week was without water after the latest drone strikes. 2 days later, most of the city was back up and running. There are dire warnings ahead. The mayor, Vitaly Klitschko's warning of people being without power for a couple of weeks at a time. But I've got to say, the authorities seem to be pretty focused, or trying to make a point of it, of trying to get locations back up and running. And there have been more pledges of support from other countries as well in helping with that endeavour, alongside military efforts as well.
How successful has been Ukraine's air defences, given the missiles that were provided by the West?
They've been hugely effective, but no system is watertight in that sense. So, you know, we often, when we hear about these almost weekly bombardments on a Monday, we hear, you know, figures of 80%, 90% of the missiles being shot down. But it's a very deliberate tactic by Moscow, because for each drone they launch, it exhausts Ukrainian missiles in its air defense systems. But for every missile that is shot down, you have falling debris onto residential areas sometimes. But of course, missiles get through. And these missiles, yes, are targeting places like power stations, but these are places surrounded by residential areas, and we've seen tower blocks hit, we've seen a petrol station destroyed close to here. Last night you could hear the air defense systems going off. So what it does do is that it creates a grim uncertainty where people start to feel the effects of infrastructure being targeted, they feel the effects of temperatures dropping. And they live with the stress of wondering, well, is this missile going to land on my roof? Yeah. So the effect is very obvious in that sense.
Now, the concern, I suppose, that Russia might have an inexhaustible supply of missiles, that's probably not so. But they do depend on the manufacture of new missiles on chip-guided geo-guidance systems, and they don't have chips.
No, this is, you know, internally, Russia is you know, all the intelligence points to that it is struggling to replenish its missile stocks. And these are missiles that cost a couple of million euros a pop. So, you know, but and yet for now, they seem willing to launch up to 80 to 100 at a time to try and put strain on Ukraine as a whole. Now, I think what that symbolizes is Russia's continued frustrations on the battlefield. It changes nothing in terms of Ukraine's attempts to try and reclaim territory. Russia is still pushing in Donetsk in the east, which is the only area it seems to be trying to launch an advance. But so it is highly likely that the Kremlin's thought, well, you know, if we can't change things here, we've mobilized already, let's put pressure on other ways. Let's make the population feel less positive about this war continuing, but also try and dilute Western support. And that's what we've seen with the threats of, or the hintings of, nuclear escalation. The temperature's dialed down a bit, but you can see Russia is trying to do what it can to sustain what it still calls a special military operation.
Boris Johnson has been talking to Sky News, and he said that Putin using a nuclear weapon would immediately tender Russia's resignation from the club of civilized nations. It would be a total disaster for Russia. It would put Russia into a cryogenic economic freeze, and Putin would lose a lot of the middle ground of global tacit acquiescence that he's had. Now, the tacit acquiescence, it's obviously self-interested acquiescence on the part of India, China, who end up getting bargain basement prices for oil and gas.
It does, but the dynamic, even with Russia's traditional alliances, the dynamic has shifted. You know, China has, you know, while it hasn't condemned the war, it certainly hasn't voiced any support for it. And there is also growing discontent with other former Soviet states like Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, where, you know, leaders have been in open dialogue with each other there on what to do with Russia's continued failings in the war. So the dynamic is shifting, and you could argue Russia is already extremely isolated in terms of, you know, the overt support for its operation in Ukraine. You just need to look at the UN members who've either abstained. Very few countries have actually condemned Russia openly. But to take Boris Johnson's point, the use of a nuclear weapon, tactical or otherwise, is yet another escalation, and it's a big one. And you can be sure that if one was deployed, then the West's level of intervention would also have to match that in their eyes. Would that mean a counter-strike with a nuclear missile? No, I don't think it means that. But you could certainly see measures taken to eradicate Russian military hardware inside Ukraine, being it naval vessels or on the ground, either from strikes from above. So, you know, I think Vladimir Putin will be aware that the use of such weapons would warrant some kind of response from the West, or provoke one. There has been intelligence, there's been reports in the US that Russian generals did discuss how a tactical nuclear weapon could be deployed potentially, either through artillery or through a missile strike. A chilling prospect, but we understand that there has been some bilateral talks this week that has dialed down the tone. But it's all part of the war of words as much as anything.
Finally, you know, Putin's adventure in Ukraine can not be seen as any kind of a success in this, if what he was trying to achieve was to keep NATO at bay, because Finland joining NATO, Sweden joining NATO, NATO pushing even closer to his borders. Is there anyone who can talk sense to Putin, or is he so all powerful that no one dares tell the emperor that he's no close?
I fear you might be right with your analogy there. I mean, we know in the couple of years building up to his full-scale invasion that his circle got a lot smaller. Certainly through the pandemic, he cut an increasingly isolated figure, and fewer people were willing to disagree with him. And there are a cocktail of forces that brought us to this point. You're right. Vladimir Putin deeply resents the expansion of NATO, and that has only happened further since the 24th of February. He resents the existence of Ukraine as a country, questions it in general, and sees Ukrainians and Russians as being of the same blood, even though Kyiv is the ancient capital of the region. But he also regrets the collapse of the Soviet Union. He sees that as a catastrophic move. He resents everything that happened in the 90s under Boris Yeltsin. And he sees this as trying to restore Russia's sphere of influence and potentially, with all the speculation around his health, try to leave it in the empire that it once was in his eyes. But the reality of this is, you know, the government in Kyiv is still in place. President Zelensky has remained. He has almost unified Western allies in, eventually, in supporting him in this war. And as long as that support continues, alongside Ukrainian bravery and stubborn resistance that no one really expected, then that alone means Russia cannot win this war. Whether Ukraine can fully repel the Russians is the crucial question.
James Waterhouse, the BBC's Ukraine correspondent based in Dnipro at the moment, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.